from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
James, call Mike Brown, tell him he can't talk anymore.
No, no.
Put the kibosh on Mike talking.
Yep. So I'll bring you into this, Casey. We were talking. The conversation started with Kevin Herter and kind of the pressure that he may have on him going into next season. And we'll get your thoughts on that in a second. But what if Casey asked, we're being a little too presumptuous about Keon being in the rotation? And I think there are some fair questions asked about Keon. And that's why I said, well, if Keon's not in the rotation, Mike Brown's not allowed to talk anymore, because he talked defense, found a guy who played defense and then didn't play him anymore. Of course, this is a completely hypothetical situation. Mike Brown's welcome to join the show and talk whenever he wants to.
Anytime.
But of course he won't, but he's welcome to. But the point, Hammer, is to Kenny's original question, do you think there's a scenario where maybe Keon isn't as involved in the rotation as maybe we think he is?
Yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, question marks with any player coming into a new season outside of like your main core guys. I mean, like we keep establishing who the core is, so we can't be frustrated or confused all that much when the other guys get moved in and out of the lineup. Like, I personally think that Keon Ellis has done enough to not only be in the rotation, but to really compete for the starting job in training camp. That doesn't mean that he's the odds-on favorite to be the starter. It doesn't mean anything other than I think that he's deserved an opportunity to compete. At the same time, like, look, you won 48 games and had the highest offensive rating in NBA history with Kevin Herter starting at your shooting guard spot the year before. If Kevin Herter comes into training camp and is in the greatest shape of his life and is moving better laterally and is hitting every single 3-point shot that he takes, there's a difference between a $17 million player and a player on a league minimum deal. And you, as a coach and as a general manager and everything else, you sort of react accordingly. Like, Kevin Herter is a very good basketball player. I'd also just, like, for me, Keon Ellis, he's a guy that fits better. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have to balance that and see if you can find a happy medium here, regardless of you know, what we think on the outside. It's gonna be a lot of difficult conversations. It's going to be a lot of, like, putting your faith in somebody. And again, you guys brought it up. Like, Kevin Herter had some struggles, and then you guys think that Mike took his confidence away a little bit. I think his confidence was gone before that, just by gauging from the 3-point shootout, gauging from his playoff performance, that his confidence was already on the rocks. What if he comes in and you need to empower him to have him be the player that he was before? And what if part of that is he's your starter again, and you've got to just build him up and try to, you know, sort of salvage what you have in him as a player right now? Because at the end of the day, you know, if the Kings do give up their draft pick this year, it's because of the Kevin Huerter trade. If they are going to acquire a major piece that's different, it's probably because they've rebuilt value in Kevin Huerter. So, you know, there is a reason why you could see Kevin Huerter play more and why you could see Keon Ellis play less.
That's a good point. One, and I don't think this will be an issue for Kevin Huerter, but I also think that if it needs to be said by somebody, I hope they're saying it. Hey man, you got a job to do. Mm-hmm. It's not about, you know, starting or not starting, coming off the bench 10 minutes a night compared to 20 minutes a night. You got a job to do. Whatever role that is, you need to excel at your role. And if I was Mike Brown, I'd tell him at the start, I'd be like, tell us right now if you don't think that you can excel in anything other than the role that you want. Because if you can't, then we need to make decisions to do something different. Mm-hmm. And that's the conversation that I would have, that we need to have. We want you here, but if we feel for this team, it's not best for you to start, but we still want you to play. When it's time for you to go in, I can't have you pouting or having a lack of confidence because you didn't start. Like we need to be off that. And I think that's the conversation they maybe need to have and look at. Mike Brown has to have the same confidence he has in Keon Ellis, that he can do pretty much anything rotational wise to Keon Ellis he wants, and he knows the level of commitment and effort he's going to get from Keon Ellis. He needs to have that same type of confidence in Kevin Huerter.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, Casey, you coach, I've coached, you know, you have the same set of ground rules for everybody, but you don't coach everybody the same. And I think people always, you know, oh, you got to treat your stars the same as you got to treat the guy making $1 million on the end of the bench. And that's not true. You know, there, you have to work with personalities that you have. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means, like, look, if someone out there doesn't think that Malik Monk wants to start, Malik Monk wants to start. He said it. Like, Kevin Huerter has always started. He would prefer to start. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not he can play off the bench or not, we have no idea. We haven't really seen it. But I also don't think that Kevin Huerter has caused problems and said, like, hey, I need to be the starter or XYZ. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't seen any of that. We just see him be more effective where he's comfortable. Right. And again, I think the key to all of this is you're trying to get the most out of your players. And I know some people could fault Mike Brown because he didn't get the most out of Kevin Huerter last year. But then you have to go back the year before where he got the most out of Kevin Huerter than anyone had ever gotten out of Kevin Huerter. I mean, Kevin Huerter came to the Kings as a guy who had averaged 12 points a game like 4 years in a row in his career. And he instantly steps up and averages over 15. So, like, look, sometimes it's about managing egos and managing, you know, like, expectations. But at the same time, we talk about this all the time where if a player is coming to your team, it's with the understanding that they're playing a specific role. And if that role grows because they just play better than expected, which is what happened with Keon Ellis, that's one thing. But you also have to understand, if you're a player like Kevin Huerter, that if you're not living up to expectations, that your minutes are going to go away, that there are players that are on the team that are playing well, that have proven that they can play well, whether as a starter or coming off the bench. And you've got to live up to your end of the bargain as well. And so I hope that this is like a problem that the Kings have, where everyone is playing so well that they don't have to worry about this. Mm. Right. So guys are competing for minutes and they're competing the right way. They're not, you know, backing into their minutes because you don't have someone else to take those minutes. And I still think that that's a possibility with this team. Like, they do have some really interesting depth. Kevin Huerter gives them depth at a position of need at the small forward spot, whether he's starting, whether he's coming off the bench. He can play the two, whether he's starting or coming off the bench. I don't think any of us know what's happening at this point. But I don't think anyone is out there causing problems. Even Malik Monk says, I want to start, but I'm going to do what's best for the team. Mm-hmm. And that's what you hope, that everyone who comes in has that mindset. Because if you have guys on your bench that don't want to be NBA starters, I don't know what you're doing. Mm. Like, everyone should want to start. Everyone should want to play as many minutes as possible. Like, that's the goal, isn't it? Like, if you're a competitor, you want to fight for a minute. You want to, you know, the whole old iron sharpens iron. Like, you want to be out there competing. And like, look, I think that they should have good competition in camp, but I also think that everybody should have an equal opportunity to step in and, you know, fight for a role. If they outplay somebody, they outplay them. And that's the way it goes. And management needs to react accordingly once all, you know, the dust settles.
Gotcha. You think this comes up a lot. Do you really think that 3-point contest played a factor into what we saw last year?
Well, I don't know if it was a symptom or if it was just part of the problem. Like, I don't think it's what caused the problem. But I certainly think, you know, leading up to the 3-point shootout, Kevin Herter had gone through like a swoon. We talked about this. You guys remember the big 48 win season? We talked about it. Malik Monk had like a 6-week stretch where he couldn't hit anything. Mm-hmm. And the same with Kevin Herter. Kevin Herter came out and shot like 57% in the first month of the season from three. And then he cooled off and then he went sideways and then he came back around. But I think that what we found is that at whatever it was at All-Star Weekend, it impacted him. It did. And then he stepped up and he had a good finish to the season. Like the last 6 or 8 games of the season 2 years ago, like he was really good again. He was hitting everything. But then the playoffs were, again, they showed this a very similar look. And so you start to wonder, is there an underlining issue here that needs to be dealt with more than just trying to get a guy out of a slump? Because it's more than one time that we've seen him sort of slip into this huge funk and not know how to get out of it. And he's not the first player to have that problem. He's not the only Kings player to have that problem. I mean, look, De'Aaron Fox had like a rough like January. Like he wasn't playing up to the same level that he was before. So I think everybody has these lulls. The only one who really doesn't is Domantas Sabonis, who maybe has 1 or 2 games that are down and then so consistent throughout the whole year. So you just kind of got to play through it with some of these guys, but that's what, you know, depth is for. If someone can't snap out of whatever funk they're in, you've got to find someone else to do it. And hopefully Mike has a little bit deeper bench this year to do that.
Do you think it mattered? Do you think it got him?
Maybe. I look at Kevin and I say he probably, he was okay. I'm a little bit overblown, but.
The playoff performance might be different.
Yeah.
That might be a little.
That might have got
a little tough to shake. Like yeah. that might sit in your stomach a little bit. But yeah. The 3-point thing, that I felt like that was a convenient thing. People, as James said, it's a symptom, not a cause.
Right. But right now, at this point, with everything we talk about, whether it's a 3-point contest, whether it's the playoffs or whatever, we're a year removed, year plus removed from all that. Like mm-hmm.
That's right.
That can't be it. Like it shouldn't be it the next season. But some humans, you know, man, I still couldn't shake what happened in the playoffs last year. Get off to a slow start, kind of snowballs on them. At this point, if that's still bothering you, well, you've got an issue for your career, at least here in Sacramento, because we'll be a year and a half removed from something like that. You got to be ready to move on.
Yeah.
And there's, like I said, I feel like Kevin is ready to move on and just be a better version of himself. I think that'll be the case, but I hope in December we're not still trying to talk about that.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think at the end of the season, he did address a lot of this. I mean, he was really honest about having like the worst season of his career, coming off the heels of the best season of his career. And he hoped that, you know, he could get back to the player he was a year before. And not only that, but he talked about how he had spent so much time during the offseason trying to work on what the Kings do as a team. And then when he got to the regular season and teams made adjustments to, you know, take away some of the things that he did, he really had worked so much on the things that, you know, to get better at as, you know, like coming off the high DHO, that he hadn't worked on a lot of the other basics that he typically did. And he thought that hurt him. And he thought that this offseason he was going to have a more balanced sort of approach to his workouts and to like who he should be as a player. And look, you live and you learn. And it sounded like Kevin was a guy who learned from the experience last year. And you hope that he can come back and be a better player. But you also have to remember that it's not just like whether Mike Brown started him or not at the beginning of the year. It's that Kevin Herter's name started coming up in trades like in December. And that doesn't feel good either. And that's part of this whole, you know, taking someone's confidence away, like whether or not they're going to be part of your group moving forward, whether or not they're part of the core. I mean, like, I don't know about you guys, but I think everyone that I've heard talk about the Sacramento Kings have written off Kevin Herter as part of a core. And he's a 25-year-old mm-hmm. player who's started, what, 140 games for you over the last 2 years. And that's just kind of crazy that we've done that. But I also think that there are some reasons and, you know, you need to see him step up and take this leap forward, at least to get back to closer to the player he was before. He doesn't need to average 15 a game, but he does need to average 13 or 14. And he does need to shoot 40% from three if he's playing close to 30 minutes a night. And, you know, there's a lot of variables in what I just said, because we don't know A, he'll be on this team. We don't know B, if he'll play 30 minutes a night or even close to it. We don't know if he'll be starting. We don't know if he's coming off the bench, but that doesn't matter. At the end of the day, your job, especially when you're getting paid the way that Kevin Herter is and way that so many of these players are, your job is to go out there and perform and do the things that you do well at an elite level. And that means, you know, hitting 38 to 41% of your 3-point shots.
In the Matthews Mattress Chatty House, Tim Richard says, his slumps, talking about Kevin Herter, were magnified, though. He gets more talk than others when things aren't going well. His 4 of 11 games are going to get coverage when Barnes also went here. Like I said, his percentages were the same as Malik Monk's. Understandable. I think Malik Monk was a playmaker. And you look at...
Well, to his point, though, Harrison was the one that's, like, confusing.
Well, but at the same time, what did we all say, or most of us say? It's time to move on.
Well, yeah.
Like, you need to upgrade from that position.
Sha'Carron the Barnes trade was a name here in the chat. Like, that was somebody's screen name.
Right.
Well, like, that
it's time to move like, on. At least a lot of people felt that way.
I get what Tim's saying, though. Like, and that's why, like, I try to be as fair as possible when we talk about, you know, not last year, but the year before. You can talk about Kevin Herter slump all you want, but Malik Monk's struggles were almost identical. They for a certain amount of time, they overlapped. And people are like, oh, but Malik brings so much else. It's like, look, Kevin Herter brings a lot to the table too. He stretches the defense. He has a gravitational pull that the Kings don't have outside of him. Like, his ability to swing off of that DHO and take all that space up, it is something that no one else on this team has. Now, that doesn't mean that he can get to the line like Malik, or get to the rim like Malik, or he can hit the pocket pass all the time like Malik. But he actually is a really good passer. He is a secondary playmaker that the Kings relied on the year before and then didn't last year. And I don't think he dealt with – it wasn't just the way that teams were defending him. It's the way that the Kings sort of presented the season to him and what his role was going to be. And they wanted, as opposed to him – coming off all of those DHOs like he had the year before, they wanted maybe half of those to go to Keegan Murray. Mm. And that meant that Kevin Herter went to go stand in the corner. Maybe he gets a ball, maybe he doesn't. So, you know, just kind of like a different flow. And also keep in mind that Kevin Herter, like whether you love him or not, like his ability to shoot is one thing, but his ability to pass is something that Harrison Barnes and Keegan Murray didn't do. Mm. So if Kevin's not in that, like, in that offense, in that offensive like motion where he's the guy on the DHO, there were a lot of times where Kevin Herter did have his shot taken away and found his teammates for open looks. And that's not something that Harrison Barnes or Keegan Murray did at all last season. And it's something that both of them, well, Keegan certainly has to get better at. So it's one thing for Kevin to create for others, but when the others don't create for him as sort of the reverse, It just takes a little bit more and a little bit more out of his game, takes a little bit more of him away. And so, like, look, I'm not blaming Kevin Herter. Like, he had a bad season, and he took accountability for that. You hope that he has a better season and that he lives up to the contract and everything else.
I really,
stuff.
I really think Kevin Huerter can help this team out a lot and add to the depth and be a really good player for this group. I wonder if he'd be accepting of the role that I'm thinking of for him that would really help out this team, which is somebody off the bench, maybe not as many looks or something like that. Maybe a heat check guy, you know, where he comes in and if he's hot, you let it ride a little bit or something like that. Not as consistent as in years past, but I think he'd be a great weapon for this team if he embraced that particular role, if it was there for him. And nothing is said. He hasn't said anything. I don't think his personality has said anything to say he wouldn't accept it. I'm just, you know, just thinking about it. But I think if he embraces, like you said earlier, a role, a different role on a new team, mm-hmm. this Kings team being
the
a new
Kings team, yeah,
being a new team compared to when he got here, I think he could really help this team out. He does a lot of really good things.
Yeah, there's nothing to say that he's not like a really good fit alongside DeMar DeRozan as mm-hmm. a floor spacing 3-point shooting guy. And again, as opposed to having Harrison Barnes at the three, who again, just didn't move the ball. Like he didn't get a lot of opportunities, but when he did, he was kind of a black hole last season. As opposed to having that, he would be playing alongside a guy who averages 5 assists a game. And so again, like basketball is the ultimate team sport. Like there, you have to have everybody sort of playing and with the same ideas in their head. And again, I think it's very possible that we see Kevin Huerter, you know, again, just like I said with Keon Ellis, he deserves to compete for the starting shooting guard spot. That's it.
How important is it for Mike to set the tone like day one of training camp? Like, do you think there's a conversation with everyone involved about that two spot being open, about everybody having an opportunity to earn it? Maybe, I don't know, saying that day we're going to try some different lineups during preseason. And because I know Mike said he had a plan for Kevin and Chris Duarte. James, you talked to Kevin, clearly wasn't aware of that plan. It was a surprise to him when he found out. How important is Mike's role in this figuring out the two spot, but you know, as training camp starts, you know, not necessarily talking about game one.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, Mike Brown's job isn't to keep Kevin Huerter happy. Mike Brown's job is to put the best five guys out on the floor that gives a team the best chance to win. And whether Kevin Herter's part of that, you know, and we're talking about 8 or 9 guys realistically, but at a time, 5 guys at a time, it's Mike's job to find the best combinations of players. It's his job to keep everybody balanced and sort of ready. And I think Mike did a good job of that last year where, you know, somebody isn't playing up to their potential, then you try something else. And you go away.
Well, that
from
wasn't
somebody.
Everybody. That was, he didn't do that with everybody. And I think that's a big. I think that is the big crux of the problem. Is he did not do that with Harrison Barnes.
Mm. Well, yeah, but Harrison's not here anymore, and he might be a one off. And like for all of the things that Harrison Barnes didn't do well, his stats read the same. It's just the opportunity was different. You know, did he rebound as well? No, he didn't rebound as well. But his assist numbers were down because his usage was down. His scoring was down because he didn't have nearly as many shots as he had in the past. And you ask like Harrison Barnes to play a different role than he had in the previous years. And everybody on the outside expects to see the same productivity despite a complete change in role. And that's not what happened. And so I don't want to make excuses for Harrison Barnes. I don't think he had a great season either. But at the same time, he's a guy who can go out there and kind of keep you centered and give you something for 30 minutes a night. And it's still a skill in the NBA. And, you know, did you need an upgrade? Yeah, you need an upgrade. And DeMar DeRozan is clearly an upgrade. But again, that doesn't mean that you won't miss Harrison Barnes' presence and some of the things that he did.
I'm not refuting any of that. You're right. He's gone. So, with all due respect, Harrison Barnes is with the Spurs now, so it doesn't matter. But that didn't happen last year. Mm-hmm. Like, there were games where he didn't do anything. Like, Kenny would come in screaming, do something! Like, anything! There were times where it's like, did Harrison even play last night? Yeah, he played 25 minutes. And you can't name one thing Harrison Barnes did in the game last night. And the point is, this isn't to be critical of Harrison Barnes. I think I'm being critical of Mike Brown because it felt like Kevin Herter got the brunt of all of this, mm-hmm. and Harrison got none of it.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
And maybe this is the skilled eye of an NBA coach that I just don't have. Maybe you're right. Maybe Harrison was doing a million of the little things back there. But when he was asked about it, he was like, oh, we don't run plays for Harrison. Hmm. Well, you weren't asked about Harrison scoring. You were asked about Harrison playing, and you're talking about running plays. Hmm. And then magically, a game later, he scores like 40 and is off to the races for the next 20 games.
Yeah. I would also, like, at some point, like, who exactly did people want to have get minutes instead of Harrison Barnes? Because last time I checked, Mike Brown didn't exactly look over on the bench and see that he had another 6'8", 3-4 combo forward.
James, you're right, but I didn't. I got tired of seeing Chris Duarte play.
Yeah,
and that's really what it came down to. It's like he keeps trying this, and then credit, like, he stopped and finally went to Keon, yeah. And it was like, all right, maybe that's what he's looking for. But I feel like it's important to point out Trey was hurt for a lot of
13 games to open the season.
Yeah, and yeah. So I don't know. It was just
and he had a calf injury, and the calf injury, once you got him back, you still had to worry about the calf injury.
Calf injuries are forever.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
They literally are.
Well, yeah. Kessler didn't get a chance either. That's true, but
yeah.
Kessler just signed a two-way contract, well, so I wonder why.
I think we also wanted Harrison traded. That was
well.
That that's
some of us more than others. Well, I like Harrison.
I really like Harrison.
Well, that's not what my note card said.
That note card is media propaganda. I like Harrison.
It's written in pen, Casey. It's written in pen.
James said it. It's written in pen.
I like we'll Harrison back. A lot. I'm gonna get emotional when the Spurs come to town.
You That's absolutely right. are not.
I am.
No, you're not. We'll come back. We'll get James's thoughts on Boogie.
Hey.
Being back in Sacramento. Boogie Ellis, that is. See them with KC on ESPN 1320. I was getting Kimberly's entire vision for the 1,000th episode. D'Lo and KC.
Oh, okay. I was going to say something, but I ain't going to say nothing.
Well, just I mean, that. She is trying to help. I just was that. Telling her what I wanted, and she was like, well, do you want to hear my vision? And I'm like, yes, I'd love to. Mm-hmm. And then she gets up. I was like, well, we're still doing a show, so maybe, you know, we have a little more free time when Not Like Us is playing four times in a row. Maybe you come in that time.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, I want to tell you now. So she was giving
to me, hell with the show.
She was giving me her vision for the 1,000th episode of D'Lo and KC, which is Wednesday, August 21st.
Well, I'm sure it was a very nice vision.
We're in the vicinity of each other. We've got a few things to work out, and since she has the credit card, pretty much going to let her do it.
You guys are like Ayuk and the Niners.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh,
maybe. Yay, what did you, James, what did you think of USA basketball yesterday morning? Did you get a chance to watch? Probably would.
No, I did. I did. Number one, I'm waiting for the real Joel Embiid to show up, because that doesn't look at all like Joel Embiid, and it's really awkward and hard to watch. I thought Kevin Durant was just so incredible.
Man.
He just walked on the court and boom, 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 boom. He's prime Kevin Durant. You're like, what is happening? I thought that Jokic looked phenomenal. He looks like he's lost about 20, 25 pounds since the season ended.
He needs to show.
He just looked like he was in great shape. He didn't play that well, but I thought physically he looked great. I thought that Team USA did a really good job of taking away Bogdanovich as a secondary scorer.
Mm.
And once they did that, it kind of left it to a bunch of randos to try to beat you. And that just wasn't going to happen. So, and I thought it was really interesting that we got to see Vanya play. He's a guy that Vlade Divac took with the 60th pick in the 2019 NBA draft. Everyone's like, who the heck is that guy? And sure enough, there he was on the Serbian national team. And I had looked for him before, and I could never find any European stats for him. Hmm. So I don't even know where he plays, but he still plays for the Serbian national team.
What was his name again?
At least in
Vanya. No, I think it's spectacular that you referenced an individual named Vanya in the game last night and didn't reference the greatest player we've ever seen taking control on the international stage for the fourth game in a row.
Oh,
what
LeBron?
What LeBron has done this stretch is just stupid. Absolutely stupid.
It's special.
He's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kyle and I talked about this on the Insiders earlier.
It's a good show.
And it was comical, all of these things coming into the Team USA experience, Anthony Edwards, this is his time. This is gonna be his team. It's like, bro, that's LeBron's team. it doesn't matter how old he is. As long as that dude's still on the court, this is his team. It's him and Steph, and it's him and Steph and AD, and that it's their team. And then KD walks in the court. You're like, okay, it's his team too. You're right. at this point, does Anthony Edwards even play? I mean, is he the Jason Tatum next game? I don't know, but all I know is that everyone else is standing out, either Embiid for the oh my gosh, what's happening here? You look like you just aged 5 years, or it's all of the older players just looking phenomenal outside of that, including AD. I don't want to take anything away from Anthony Davis. I think he has been a flat out game changer for Team USA on the defensive end.
Well, James.
Oh, this is about, I'm talking, here comes hate.
No,
this, I'm
going to talk to James because James kind of understands what I'm saying. James, I don't think our guy. Partner, you don't see it the same way. I'm not saying make a move as soon as he comes off the plane, but the Sixers need to start having some conversations. They need to start having. I'm not saying this year. I'm not saying right now. I'm just saying they need to start having some conversations. They need to start having some exit strategies. And like, man, should we pull a Bill Walsh here and move on a year too early as opposed to hold on a year too long? I'm just saying, because I was listening to you guys earlier.
34.7. Right. Yeah, move on. Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't say this year.
34.7.
He's probably going to have 30 points a game again next year. But the
hey,
guy.
Yeah, history was said that. He's done it three years in a row.
Hey, how many, what's going to be higher, his points per game or his games played?
Cool. Like,
it is pretty goddamn close. I'm going to tell you that right now. It is stunningly close from last year.
And I don't know if it's going to get better just because, like you were talking about earlier, Ham. I mean, I wouldn't look at Joel Embiid this year in this Olympics and be like, man, he's trying to make sure his body's right to make sure he doesn't get hurt again.
You treating him like a running back. He's about to turn 30 and you got his career over with.
Not over, but maybe you can. Maybe it would be a year or two too early. It would be too early. I'm not saying that's the case, but if. It's almost like a quarterback, right? Like a Dak Prescott. If you don't think that this Joel Embiid after this year can get you a championship, I think you need to start having a conversation.
It's tough. It's like the old like Bible verse. Like you don't build your house on sand. You build it on stone. And
it sounds like a James Ham line as much as a Bible verse.
Just telling you, man, it really does feel like they've built their franchise around a player. And unfortunately, his body is not letting him keep up. And I'm very surprised that, you know, why is it that they sent Kawhi Leonard home? Because they were sort of worried about his health and they didn't see the same exact thing. I think the 76ers would have been way better off as a franchise if Joel Embiid stayed at wherever he goes during the offseason, worked with their training staff, worked with their medical staff, and tried to get 100%. Because that's what, like, right now I'm looking at him, and, man, we're almost August, and that dude doesn't look right at all. And I don't know that he needs, like, a surgery or something, but certainly his body needs something. And, like, we're watching a dude who, yes, can dominate on the NBA at the NBA level as well as anybody, but this is a player they're getting this year, I don't know. That's not good. I don't see an MVP caliber player, unfortunately. And it's not like he's the first big man like this to break down.
He's been an MVP caliber player 4 years in a row.
I think he's probably gonna be make it 5 years.
But
I think he's gonna be that type of player. I forgot who I was listening to.
Here's the reality though. What were we talking about with De'Aaron? Most players don't play their entire careers with a single franchise.
Yeah.
So the thought of Joel Embiid getting traded isn't really that crazy.
Right. Yeah. I would say this.
Daryl Morey ain't going to do it when Joe wants it. He's going to do it when he wants to.
I know. Yeah. I think it was Trista who was saying this. Because it is what it is. And they were asking, why do people not like Joel?
It was absolutely Trista.
And she brought it. She was like, I used to watch him all the time. He would not come out till he got 30 and 10. So, like, not saying that he's got the skill to do it, but it didn't matter if they were getting blown out, if they were blowing somebody out, he wouldn't come out of the game till he got his 30 and 10. And that's where you get, like, well, he's averaging 30 points a game.
Oh, so he's Dak Prescott now.
Well.
Wow. All right.
I'd say like Soren Smith from the chat.
That's a good one. He might be Jeff Prescott.
Yeah. Soren Smith from the chat. Trade him before his injuries completely derail him. I have a feeling, I don't know, that might have been 2 years ago.
No. That's, what are you two doing?
Just saying.
The man won the MVP two seasons ago.
It wasn't 2 years ago. Man, it might have been last year.
What did Joe do to you? Why are y'all friends? You know what you guys are those guys in Paris. Every time Joe touched the ball the other day, they booed the hell out of him. That's James and Kenny.
Hey, Joel, I like Joel in the league. Obviously, I like his talent, but I mean, what, he's going to get healthier? Anybody think he's going to get healthier over the next couple of years?
No, he's not going to get healthier.
So it's going to get worse
than
what
think
it is
now? Well, no. I mean,
or stay the same.
You know how many games he played last year?
50.
What? Did you not hear what I just said? He averaged 34.7 points per game last year. He played 39.
That's crazy. I was being facetious when I said that is crazy. I didn't know the number.
Because it was, remember, he didn't play almost the entire second half of the season.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's crazy. And like I said, when you, the whole thought behind trading Joel is like you, maybe you can get, I'm just throwing out a player out there. Maybe you could get a Scoot Henderson.
I feel like
a great young player because he is still MVP caliber.
I'm sure Joe was in on it. I don't think he was ready to return when he did.
Oh yeah, he wanted to come back. Yeah,
which it's a credit to Joel, in my opinion. But they were so desperate to win that he came back at the detriment of himself, obviously the team at this point, and it may have been at the detriment of next season.
Or this is what you do if you keep Joel Embiid around. Is you reduce the usage and everything else like that, and you hand the keys to Maxi. And Joel probably not going to average 34 points a game. But if he's averaging 27 a night, but he's able to get through a season or something like that, that may be what you do. But this ain't going to work. Asking him to do 34 and 14, and he's going to break down every time.
But Joel is I think even if you limit it, it's going to be tough because Joel's a big dude.
Well, that's the other thing. He needs to come into camp, and it's probably not going to happen this year.
It is
not. But he needs to come into camp like Shaq did his first year in Miami.
It's not going to happen this year.
Remember how big Shaq was in 04, and then he goes to Miami?
Yeah, he got his feelings hurt, so he lost a bunch of weight.
Somebody needs to hurt Joel's feelings.
Yeah, and people in Paris seem to be hurting him. They booed his ass. They treated him like he was Buddy Hield at the Golden One Center.
That's true.
They booed him every time he touched the ball.
Yeah.
And cheered when Jokic cooked him.
That's
they absolutely popped when Jokic cooked him. That is crazy.
They did. Cam's answer to Joel was funny, though. It's like, They're Mace and Trista, they gave all these detailed answers or whatever, and Cam goes, bro, what, nobody even thinking about you. That's why we don't like you.
Yeah, that was funny.
Nobody was even thinking about you.
I don't know that.
Lamar's back.
I don't know that this will. I don't know if this will carry over. The Suns added Tyus Jones over the weekend. That actually feels like a good pickup for them.
I'm not as high on it as I know James really liked it. Everybody else, they still got issues.
Oh, no doubt. But
like, and the issue is going to be Tyus Jones. Like, they have a fundamental flaw with the way that everything is set up, because you're either going to go extremely small and have Tyus with Book, Bill, KD at the four, or Tyus ain't gonna be out there. And then what about Grayson Allen? You just gave him an $80 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
When is he gonna play?
Mm-hmm.
And when is he gonna close out games? So now you're gonna be a team that isn't able to stretch the, well, you got KD at the four, maybe you can, you know, stretch it out that way. But I just, the fundamental flaw is having Booker and Bradley Beal.
I was surprised Book started yesterday.
I thought he played really well.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
I was hating a little bit at first.
Wow.
But I was like, okay, I'll shut the hell up. Like, I will shut the hell up. Like, he's playing well.
Yeah. My thought on Tyus is, first of all, you got him for free, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're only paying like $3.3 million, but that's rookie scale, so you're paying him like $2.2 million. So that's nothing for a guy who, you know, shot 41% from three. Averaged 7.3 assists and barely turned the ball over. Like, he's just a really, really solid NBA player. Maybe he was miscast a little bit last year trying to, you know, run like a really, really bad Washington team. But if you're going to have Bradley Beal making 50-something million dollars a year and playing 50 games, you have to have a Tyus Jones. And look at what he did a couple of years ago with Memphis, where every time Jaw was out, he stepped up, and they went like 20-3 with Tyus Jones as their starting point guard with Jaw Morant out. He's just a really, really solid dude, and he instantly slides into what, fifth, sixth, seventh best player on that team. And for me, that just means they got better. Like, whether he fits with everybody, I don't know. But he plays defense. He doesn't make mistakes. He can score. He can hit wide open threes. He's not a me guy. I just think they got better as a team. That's the type of, like, budget free agent signing that if they would have had last year, they would have had a much better shot. If they would have gone out and got a couple of those guys, the guys that, you know, are sort of, I don't know, looking to rebuild their value, but I don't even know why Tyus Jones needed to rebuild his value. He's a good ball player.
I know he is a good ball player. And if he's there, if you're Phoenix, you pick him up and you try and figure things out later. Like I said, I just think they got a fundamental flaw with it. It's the issue
is roster construction.
Yeah, the issue is Booker and Beal being on the team together. And obviously you'd pick Booker over Beal, but I'm not even saying that to say Bradley Beal is bad. It's just those two together, it just creates problems. So,
yeah.
I think it doesn't necessarily create problems. It puts a ceiling on how far I think they can go.
Yeah, but when they're both healthy, they're really good. So, like, as a team, that team really started to storm once you got all three of you guys healthy. And if you've got Tyus Jones to sort of take some of the strain off of Bradley Beal, I don't know.
People think the Kings going to be small, though. What does that team look like when you go out in the fourth quarter, Tyus Jones, Booker, Beal, KD, and who's their center? Is it Plumlee?
Nurkic.
Oh, Nurkic, that's right.
Oh, no, they got Plumlee, too. But see, again, the Plumlee signing, again, if they would have made that signing last year, they would have been a better team as opposed to bringing in, you know, what they bring in, Watanabe and
Eubanks played good last year. Eubanks won them some games, actually, when I was watching. He did about what Plumlee would do. The whole point is I haven't changed how I feel about the Suns based on this. They're 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, I got them at 5, 6, 7. Like right there, right around the Kings, right around the Pelicans, 5, 6, 7. So
Pelicans are fascinating. How much of your opinion on where the Kings finished is swayed by the return of a Boogie to Sacramento?
Let's go.
Boogie Ellis.
Oh, we'll steal this go.
6'1", a little shorter than Kenny Caraway anticipated, but has a chance to, you know, to earn a spot on this team. It just feels tough, Hammer, because he's a guard. As Casey pointed out, he's a small guard, but he showed some things in summer league that I think, you know, it's difficult to evaluate summer league because at certain points you just start looking for something, and like I think a lot of people were kind of watching Boogie, and he showed out for them for a stretch of games there. But in terms of the Sacramento Kings at the Golden One Center, 82 games a season, it's tough for me to see Boogie making this team, but it'd be dope to see him, you know, with the franchise somehow.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting signing. Both him and who did they sign late last week? Orlando Robinson. Yeah. Orlando Robinson, I think, has a better chance of making the team. But I think that if I'm looking at like Boogie Ellis, like I don't think he's going to have he might have an opportunity to make the team, but it's going to be tough. Like that's going to be a non-guaranteed contract. It's going to have some guaranteed money. So if he sticks around, but the problem they have with him is that he's a rookie. And so he would have to go through the G League draft and they would have to select him, if I'm not mistaken. So you're not going to give him a bunch of money up front. What I would say, though, is that I've said this a couple of times. I don't like two-way contracts are not like they're kind of a dime a dozen in the NBA. Like teams don't look at two-way contracts the way that like you look at a standard $500,000 contract. If somebody isn't going, like there could be a competition for one of their two-ways during training camp. There could even be a competition for like the 14th or 15th roster spot with one of their two ways, and that could open up a two-way contract. So I think by having Boogie under contract, like during the start of training camp, it's probably like an Exhibit 10 contract. There is a way where you could either waive one of your other two ways and lock him into a two-way contract, or you could have one of your two ways, say a guy like Mason Jones, somehow find his way onto the main roster and then convert a guy like Boogie Ellis to a two-way contract. I like the idea of him. You know, you need these guys at the G League level who are, you're trying to build up a little bit. Plus, Alvin Gentry's son works for, works at USC, in their basketball program. And that's where Boogie Ellis came from. And they know more about Boogie Ellis than maybe the average team does. And they probably think he's worth the investment here to at least give him a training camp invite and see what you can create out of him. Because the way he played in Vegas, the way he fought and the way that he competed is contagious. And it's something that you want as part of either your G League or sort of that development squad that you're trying to build. So I like him, like whether or not he makes a team or not, or you get some sort of opportunity here. I'm not sure, but they do like him.
Russ Dog in the chat asked the Matthews Mattress Chatty House asked a good question with Devin Carter on the injury list to start the season. Does that affect what, like, how would they maneuver that? Because obviously he's got a roster spot, Devin Carter does. But if he's on the injury list for, I don't know what the, if it's not 90-day DL like baseball, but if he's out for half the year, how do they do that roster-wise as far as, can they use, is it just two ways that they can use, or can they bring in a Boogie Ellis and keep him on the active roster and then maybe they have to release him or assign him to Stockton afterwards without being a two-way guy? Like, how does that potentially play out?
Yeah, as of right now, he's on a regular contract. It's probably like what they call an Exhibit 10 contract. So it's basically a summer contract, but it's easily convertible. You can convert it to a standard NBA roster spot. And as of right now, that's what it is. It's a standard NBA roster spot. So in order to keep him, they probably would just not waive him. And they have until like January 20th or something like that was last year's mark. So they can keep him and just kind of see how he goes, or they can waive him in training camp. Like, there's all kinds of different avenues here for what they might do with him. But as of right now, he's under contract. So you have to remember that during the off season, you're allowed to carry up to 21 rostered players. Mm-hmm. So of those 21, 18 can be regular roster players, and then three two-way contracts. And then you have to pare down to 15 for the start of the NBA season. And Devin Carter will be one of those 15, no matter what. He's under contract. He's locked up to a 4-year deal, whatever, you know, your standard NBA rookie contract. But that doesn't mean that Boogie Ellis is like exempt from all that. He could easily just like fight his way onto the roster and keep fighting. And whether he gets minutes or not, that's going to be like a far cry. Like, someone like Jordan McLaughlin, you're going to give more time to. You're going to let him like kind of prove his worth. Guys like Keon Ellis, maybe even Colby Jones would sort of get an opportunity, you would think, before a guy like Boogie Ellis. But I think the one good thing about the Kings is because of things like the Mason Jones deal or the Chimezie Metu thing or the Damian Jones thing or the Keon Ellis thing, the Kings are proving to be one of the G League teams that value their two-way players and give them an opportunity to play, but also there's a pathway to the main roster from the G League, which is not the same with a lot of teams out there. It's a good way to build a program. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I like Boogie. I was telling Dame earlier, that's the kind of guy I like to see the Kings take a chance on. I thought he was 6'4", 6'5".
Now Kenny hates him because he's not tall enough.
Vertically impaired.
I think Carter's going to have a tough time getting on the floor, especially if things go well for the Kings to start the season. That, of course, that's a big if.
Yeah.
Like, incorporating someone who I do think they plan on being a part of what they do, but incorporating him in season, I think it's going to be difficult. Like, he could wind up being really, really limited his rookie season. Of course, the first part of the year could go to hell, and they're like, we need something. And
sir, hoping not.
No, we certainly don't. James, appreciate you as always. Make sure you are tapped in with the insiders beginning at 10 a.m. Tomorrow morning here on Sacramento Sports Leader. What are we doing next? ESPN? Nope. Run it back? We're going to Run It Back. Hey, Run It Back is back. I think we got Golden Green pregame shows tomorrow. We got all kind of stuff jumping off. We're going to head over to 102.5. You can stick around for more D'Lo and KC next on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Gigantes, who don't play today.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.